have a quorum. This is Thursday, January 5th, 2023. Just want to apologize for the absence of the chair. She should be along shortly, stuck in traffic this morning with the adverse weather. And she will have some, with regards to the agenda, the chair will have some opening remarks and committee policies and procedures to speak to when she arrives. I'm going to bypass those items on the agenda for now. I just want to remind members at this point, though, that the microphones in front of you are very, very sensitive and will pick up background conversation. Morning, Senator Dietzick.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. Thank you.
Thank you for speaking to Senate File 25 this morning. Do you have an author's amendment?
I have an author's amendment. So Senate 25 is the tax conformity bill. I believe most of this is from the what I'm calling the 2022 bill that wasn't. And I have the author's amendment, and it is a delete everything. The
Would
A1
you like to
amendment.
Move that amendment, Senator?
I move the A1 amendment.
Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment is adopted. To your bill, Senator.
I'm going to ask that Commissioner Marquardt come up and give some comments.
It's a great privilege to have you here. Can you please introduce yourself for the record?
You bet. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I am Paul Marquardt, the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, and I am very thankful to Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan for this appointment, and I really greatly look forward to working with this committee and the legislature and residents around the state of Minnesota. So it's an honor to be here, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Senator Dietzick, for bringing forward this bill. A big thank you to this committee for acting quickly and bringing this federal conformity bill forward. This is a top priority for Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan to have this bill move quickly so that we can get much needed overdue tax cuts to individuals, families, and businesses, and hopefully at the same time create a simpler process and less costly process to the taxpayer. So, members, if we can do this quickly, the wonderful staff at the Department of Revenue has told me that if we can do this quickly, there will be no disruptions or delays to when Minnesota opens its filing. We typically open filing at the same time as the IRS. They have not announced the date yet, but last year it was Monday, January 24th. And so we would anticipate it would be roughly that same time. So if we can do that, pass this into law quickly, the Department of Revenue can get the 2022 tax forms changed. We can get out to the software vendors so that they can make changes and also make valuable tests so they can take out any glitches in the system and so forth, and so that they can also be ready for when the IRS opens their season, and then we can open our tax filing season also. So that's very important. So members, why are we here today? I mean, Minnesota law, Minnesota taxpayers rely on the federal definition of income when we're filing our Minnesota forms. And so when the federal government passes a law that has tax implications that deal with federal adjusted gross income or federal taxable income, it impacts our Minnesota filers. And if we do not conform, it creates a lot of extra complexity in that Minnesota tax filers have to go back and adjust in comparison to the federal form. So they might have to add back income or subtract, whatever that might be. So not only does that create undue complexity for our taxpayers and extra costs, but it also creates more complexity and cost for tax administration. And so this bill, what it does is it catches up on seven federal laws that have been passed since December of 2019. A lot of all the COVID bills that were passed, the CARES Act, the ARPA Act, all of those. It takes into effect seven of those and conforms to almost all of the federal changes to definition. Also, this bill, and Senator Nelson is very well aware of this, this bill is very, very similar to the one that we had last year in conference committee that had been agreed to in 2022, and almost identical to that. And also, there are no changes made that were made in 2021 in that tax bill. And a lot of that conformity was for tax year 2020. And so there's no changes to that at all. So how this is going to work, there's been a bit of a discussion. Last year, there was a talk of doing, and the department was in conversation with the legislature and stakeholders of doing something called, it was kind of called a catch-up, where you would kind of take all of your amended returns, kind of lump them together, and then maybe do a subtraction or whatever that might be, and then file that on your 2022 returns. What we found out, the department found out, is that when they met with stakeholders and such, the subtraction did not give everyone the amount of tax cuts that they really should have had coming under all of those acts. And already exemptions were being made in this, okay, well, we will have to exempt this instead of the catch-up. So as they looked at things and stakeholders looked at this, because, for example, interactions. So if you go back and have to amend a return back to 2018 or 2019, there's income implications. And because of some interactions that work, if you're qualifying for certain credits or property tax refund or things like that, it actually kind of penalized you. It doesn't work out because of the interactions. And we feel this approach, which will be this, that in 2022, if passed quickly, for all of that, you'll just have to file one time. And it'll take care of all the 2022 provisions. You won't have to come back and amend the returns. But you still would now in 2018, 2019, 2020, and 21 go back and amend your returns. We feel this is the only way that we can make sure that taxpayers are whole and get the tax cuts that they should have received had we conformed year by year. And so that's the approach that's in the bill, but we think this is the way to keep all the taxpayers whole. Just a couple more things before I turn over to Joanna Bears, if I could, Senator Desick, is that when I was the tax chair, I didn't always worry about this, but anytime you add complexity, there is a cost to the Department of Revenue. Now, we are not asking for any funding in this bill, but just remember down the road that anytime we make changes in the department and have to go back and look at things, I mean, it's extra administrative work and there will be a cost, but like I said, there is nothing asking for that in the bill. So I will conclude that Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan are very thankful to this committee for taking up this bill today and for moving it quickly, because it will provide very important tax cuts, overdue tax cuts to our individuals, our families, and our businesses, and also hopefully simplify the tax filing season for filers and make it less costly for them. So I'm certainly open for any questions, but I would like if Joanna Bears, the legislative director from the Department of Revenue, could go over some of the finer details in the bill, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. And Ms. Bears, could you introduce yourself for the record and give your testimony?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I want to thank Chair Rest and Senator Klein and Senator Weber for authoring this bill. We really appreciate your support on this. And I also want to say thank you to Nora, who's been with us the whole way and getting this bill ready for today. Federal conformity is important because it maintains our base calculation for our Minnesota tax system. When we are out of conformity, it makes the tax system more complicated and confusing for taxpayers trying to comply with our state tax laws. Conformity is a routine thing we do at the department. Every time federally Congress passes an act, we have to go back and look at our tax system and determine what items we should recommend to conform with and what items we should decouple with. However, explaining conformity can be complex. So because a lot of the conformity items are technical, I do have an attorney here, Jeremy Iden. He is Revenue's nonpartisan legal department to walk through the conformity items. If we're ready to walk through them right now, I'll bring him up.
Thank you, Ms. Bears. Good morning, Mr. Iden. Can you introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeremy Iden. I'm an attorney with the Minnesota Department of Revenue and a member of the nonpartisan staff. I will walk through just a general overview of the federal update bill. If there are technical questions, I'd be happy to answer them, but I'm just going to do a general overview. This bill will conform Minnesota statutes to seven federal bills. We are conforming to the following federal acts: the further Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2020, the Families First Coronavirus Response Act of 2020, the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security CARES Act of 2020, the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021.
Mr. Iden, sorry to interrupt you, sir. Could you just get the microphone a little bit closer to yourself? Thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. The American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, of 2021, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act of 2021, and the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. This bill, while conforming to all provisions of the above acts, decouples from the effects of certain parts of the acts with additions, subtractions, and exceptions and exclusions. This bill decouples from the following provisions: provisions in the CARES Act suspending restrictions on net operating losses and excess business losses, the CARES Act temporary suspension on the deduction for business interest, the limitation on the deductibility of wages used to claim the employee retention credit, which was originally enacted in the CARES Act, increases in the gross income of a business that claimed the payroll credit for the required sick leave, the payroll credit for the required family leave, and the continuation coverage premium assistance credit. The sick and family leave credits were originally enacted in the CARES Act, and the premium assistance credit was enacted in ARPA. The above-the-line deduction for the qualified tuition and related expenses, which was extended to tax years 2018 and 2020 under the Further Consolidated Appropriation Act of 2020. The above-the-line deduction for certain cash charitable contributions originally enacted in the CARES Act and extended in the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021. Business meals deducted in excess of the 50% limitation. This limitation was temporarily increased to 100% in the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021, effective for tax years 2020 and 2021. For trusts, increases in the adjusted gross income limitation.
Excuse me. Good morning. And I can't hear you. So if you would put the mic closer to you.
Sorry, I'll try to speak louder, Madam
Chair. Oh, that's much better. Thank you.
For trusts, increases in the adjusted gross income limitation for the charitable contribution deductions. The limitation was increased under the CARES and CAA 2021, effective for tax year 2020 and 2021. for individuals, estates, and trusts, increases in the charitable contribution deduction limitation from 60% to 100% of adjusted gross income for certain cash contributions only. For C-Corps, charitable contributions deducted in excess of 10%, but not more than 25% of taxable income. The limitation was increased under CARES and the CAA 2021, effective for tax years 2020 and 2021. Special rules for the disaster-related casualty losses, which were enacted as a part of the Further Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2020 and the CAA of 2021. Section 3 of the bill also adds a new subdivision that will not allow qualified entities of the pass-through entity tax to claim a credit on the return. The qualifying owners will need to claim claim any refunds once they have claimed the credits that were passed down from the qualifying entities. Sections 6, 7, 15, and 16 update the definition of earned income in various places used in Minnesota statute. The main change from the federal definition is that it needs to be calculated in the current year rather than an amalgamation of the current year and the previous year. Sections 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13 create additions and subtractions for the additional carrybacks and net operating losses and business interest. These provisions make taxpayers make additions in the years of the business interest deductions and allow for subtractions in the years going forward. Sections 20 and 21 add temporary additions and subtractions for Sections 20 and 21 add temporary additions and subtractions. For individuals, it adds a limitation on the deductibility of wages used to claim the employee retention credit. It increases the gross income of a business that claimed the payroll credit for required sick leave, the payroll credit for the required family leave, the continuation coverage, and the continuation coverage premium assistance credit. The sick and family leave credits were originally enacted in the CARES Act, and the premium assistance credit was originally enacted in ARPA. The above-the-line deduction for qualified tuition and related expenses, which was extended to through tax year 2018 and 2020. The above-the-line deduction for certain cash care charitable contributions originally enacted in the CARES Act and extended in the Consolidated Appropriations Act. The business meals deduction in excess of the 50% limitation. For trusts, increases the adjusted gross income limitation for charitable contribution deductions. For property tax refunds, it excludes the business credit provisions from affecting the calculation of household income for the property tax refund program. And this section is effective in different parts. Paragraph A and C are effective retroactively at the same time with that they were effective for federal purposes, and that paragraph D, which deals with a property tax refund, is effective retroactively beginning with refunds based on rent paid in 2021 and property taxes payable in 2022. For corporations, the additions and subtractions include the limitation on the deductibility of wages used to claim the employee retention credit, increases in the gross income of a business that claimed the payroll credit for required sick leave, the payroll credit for required family leave, the continuation coverage premium assistance credit, the business meals deduction, the business meals deducted in excess of the 50% limitation, for charitable contributions deducted in excess of 10%, but not more than 25% of taxable income. And then this section is effective retroactively at the same time that the changes were effective for federal purposes. Section 26 includes an extension to the statute of limitations, which will allow taxpayers to amend, going back to 2018, any changes that were made as a result of this act. Taxpayers will be able to go back and make amends for those years, including 2018, which would normally be outside the statute of limitations. And Section 28 is a repealer, which would repeal 290.0111, which was a temporary conformity provision, that it will now be rendered obsolete now that we are doing full conformity. And that concludes my testimony, unless there are questions.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dietzig.
I believe Commissioner Marquardt would like to add a few more comments.
Yeah. Yes, I was going to call on him next. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam.
Welcome to the chair. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
So, Paul Marquardt, Commissioner of Revenue, and thank you very much, Madam Chair. And
welcome to the committee.
Did want to reiterate a couple comments I made earlier, but Madam Chair, the Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan is very appreciative of your efforts in moving this bill forward quickly. And so thank you for that. Also, I wanted to say, this is the first time I've been back in this room since last May, and I remember that day we took a picture of five tax chairs right up there, and it was Senator Nelson and myself who were current tax chairs, but then also you, Madam Chair, Senator Bach, and Representative Davids. And as I look further into things, I believe, Madam Chair, that you are the only legislator in the history of this state to now both chair the House Taxes Committee and the Senate Taxes Committee. So just a big congratulations from the department, myself, the governor and lieutenant governor on that. So I just wanted to add that, and just a big thank you for hearing this quickly and moving this forward and getting overdue tax relief to folks. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Commissioner, and I want to also myself congratulate you, and it is a pleasure and an honor to have you appear before us, and I want to thank especially this morning Senator Klein and Senator Weber, who are the co-authors of the governor's bill that we're taking up this morning. So now is the time. We have one person that asked to testify, and I wonder, Mr. Pagnito, if you'd come forward now, and then we'll go to a general discussion from the members and questions of Commissioner Marquardt. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Gino Fragnito, and I'm the Government Relations Director at the Minnesota CPA Society. We're a professional association of about 8,000 CPAs throughout Minnesota. About half of those work in public practice at CPA firms, and the other half are working at businesses and industries in all of your districts throughout the state. And we would like to thank the committee for taking this bill up quickly and moving it quickly. It will be a big relief for CPAs who are in the midst of preparing for the 2022 tax season to have some certainty going into it. And as Commissioner Marquardt said, the timing is very important. If you think back to the 2021 tax bill that passed, when it passed it on July 1st, it was almost 2 months. It was the end of August when we really were able to have the software providers confirm that the testing had been done. So there's a lot of work that needs to go into that as well behind the scenes. I will call a couple things I'd like to bring to your attention. Certainly with the amended returns, those will not come without a cost. There will be a cost to the taxpayer to file those amended returns. And so looking at the timing and making people whole, there's certainly the department's looking to do that and make sure that everybody is entitled to and receives the refunds that they might be subject to based on the amended returns. But when I've talked with CPAs around the state, if you look at the amended returns, and you have to do the cost-benefit analysis for yourself. And so looking at, just take the 10% tax bracket, if you had a adjustment of $7,000, that would be about a $700 perhaps adjustment, and that's about the cost of what that amendment would be. And so if you're in a lower tax bracket, you're going to need a bigger adjustment to break even. So thinking about that one-time adjustment and how that mechanism might work in the future, I think would be something that would be worthy of a conversation before the committee. And then the final item I'd like to bring to your attention is in the bill that there's a current six-month requirement for all of these amended returns to be processed, and the CPAs would respectfully ask that we perhaps extend that, and I've been in conversation with Commissioner Marquardt, and there seems to be some agreement that we would be able to come up with a date that would extend that out to perhaps December 31st to allow the CPAs to process that. We're in the middle of the 2022 season. and then to add back five or four potential years of additional amended returns. It's a lot of work to push through the system in a short amount of time, and that extra time would be appreciated to make sure that it's done right expeditiously and that the taxpayers are made whole. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pregnito. Any questions for Mr. Pregnito? Senator Nelson.
My understanding was the true-up provision would have prevented Minnesota taxpayers from needing to pay for all those multiple amended returns. And maybe the reason it's not included now, I was told, was because most businesses have their own in-house who can take care of that piece. But I guess what I really want to know about is the mom and pop and
folks. Senator Nelson, I'm informed that your microphone is not on.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'll try and make these repeat comments a bit shorter. Thanks, Madam Chair. So my question, Mr. Fragnito, is about the true-up provision or about these amended returns. And so I thought I understood your testimony to say that there's going to be a cost to the taxpayers to file amendments for each of these, you know, six or seven conformity pieces, years that we're conforming to, and I wanted to know how that would affect, you know, your average taxpayer on the street. Not the large corporations that might have their own in-house counsel to figure out that cost-benefit analysis. I just want to know what are our CPAs on our main streets across Minnesota? How do they feel, or how is this going to affect the average Minnesota taxpayer? And do you feel that true-up provision that we worked on last year that was in that conference committee report, would that alleviate, if there's this concern about the cost to Minnesota taxpayers to pay for these amended returns?
Mr. Fragnino.
Madam Chair, thank you. Senator Nelson, I'll start with the second part first. On the true-up provision, certainly it would not cover everybody, as the commissioner did say. There would be those that would still need to file amended returns, but it would take care of, at least from my member's perspective, a lot of the individuals who are in that situation. And so in terms of the cost, that those small businesses, the mom and pop that you described on Main Street, would need to have that conversation with their tax professional or CPA and decide, is this something that I want to pay you and it's going to be worth, and I'm not going to end up at a net zero situation, or do I not want to go through the effort and stay where I'm at and not do the amendment?
Madam Chair?
Senator Nelson.
So would it be fair to say that then you prefer having the true-up provision that's not in this current bill, or have you taken a position on that? If I understood the commissioner right, the true-up provision is not in this particular bill because of the cost to the department, but I'm wondering if it's being shifted onto the consumers.
We'll hear from Mr. Fragnito first, and then Commissioner would ask you to comment. Mr. Fragnito.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, certainly the true-up provision would reduce cost for a number of taxpayers. I would not say that it would eliminate it for everybody, but I believe that the number of affected taxpayers would be significantly lower if there was a one-time catch-up provision that we had discussed in previous years.
Thank you.
Commissioner Markort.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Senator Nelson. So it's not because it would be an increased cost to the department. You know, one of the main mission and goals of the department, you've probably heard this before from previous commissioners, is that every taxpayer pays no more and no less than required by law. And even as we were going through the catch-up last year, and I remember the conversation, is that the stakeholders were coming and saying, this isn't going to fit for this person, it's not going to fit for this person, and so forth. So you already had people that would have to go to their accountants and CPAs and figure out, can I do this or not, which is going to be a cost. And again, there's interactions that occur on income. So you go back to 2018 or 2019, and you're amending your returns on something that, of course, impacted your income, there are, as I've learned, interactions that take place that would hurt, like on a working family credit or the PTR, getting the full amount of the credit that you deserve. And so as the department looked at it, just kind of with, that, as already mentioned, it's going to impact people differently. We thought the one sure way to make sure that everybody is getting the tax cuts under the law, that this was the best approach. But it wasn't because of an extra cost to the department. It's we want to make sure that everyone gets the tax cut that they deserve with this federal conformity.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Senator Skalski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good to see you, Representative Commissioner.
Good morning.
Look forward to our discussions in this committee and beyond, and good to see you again. Hope you made her over from Dilworth okay.
I did.
I'm just wondering, and I don't know, actually this isn't for Mr. Fragnito, but it's related to the bill itself. Is that okay, Madam Chair?
Of course.
Okay.
And thank you, Mr. Fragnito, for your testimony. Senator Skalski.
So thank you, Madam Chair. So the discussion or the question would be for the commissioner or the earlier testifier from the department we had. Section 27 of the bill, the Working Family Credit Special Rule, and I was trying to understand it better. I'm wondering if the department could kind of explain this section in more detail. It appears to me, Madam Chair, that rather than being a conformity provision, there's a deliberate effort to non-conform here. And I'm wondering if I'm reading this correctly.
Commissioner Markhorn.
Madam Chair, Representative Senator Druskowski. My apologies. If I can turn that over to Ms. Bears.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director at the Department of Revenue. Madam Chair, Senator, it's because we already have, so that piece that we're decoupling from, or that special rule, changes it for the age limit for people to qualify for the working family credit, and it also allows other types of people who may not have been able to qualify for the working family credit previously. So I believe it's for children in foster care, things like that. The reason we're decoupling is because currently under state law, we already have an age limit that we have put into the law that would be different than what's in the conformity provision. And so we would actually not consider that conforming because we'd have to change state law in order to conform with that date because we'd have to change our current date or our current, we'd have to change our current age limit in state law already. So we've already kind of decoupled from that piece with the federal government. And the other reason that we wouldn't do it for these other folks is because these folks would probably be new filers and we have no good way to do outreach to find who these people are. And so we don't know how many would actually file for this change.
Senator Griskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bears.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Bears. So the part about the state law, so we've got a state law that says we need to go in a direction that is more generous than what the earned income credit is doing federally. Why do we need to have this provision in there then if indeed that's contrary to what the feds are doing?
Ms. Bears.
Madam Chair, Senator. That's why we're actually decoupling from this provision, because this provision allows for people who are 18 to receive it and folks over 65. And so we already allow 19-year-olds to receive it. And so we are just removing that section. That was a temporary provision in there.
Kind of a technical thing, Madam Chair, the way it sounds.
It is.
Thank you, Ms. Bear.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to thank Commissioner, the Department, for being willing to remove the revenue enhancers that were in the original conformity bill. Now, it was stated to me that, you know, they would probably like to discuss them again with the regular omnibus bill as we get towards the end of session. I, however, would like to encourage you to keep those revenue enhancers out. The reality of it is we're looking at unprecedented surpluses, and I understand these revenue enhancers, for those that are listening, didn't take come about until 26, 27, 28, far down the road, and we do not know, obviously, what the economy, whether on a national basis, what a state basis, what our income is going to be at that point. But I think if we get to a point where things have tightened up considerably and the state needs to look at revenue increases, let's at least have the courage to stand in front of the public and debate that at that time and not provide an automatic increase that will be come in through the back door and catch people at that stage. So I would hope that you would approach it from that standpoint as we go past this bill to the full tax omnibus bill by the end of session. Thank you.
Commissioner Mark Ward, do you have a response?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Weber, thank you for those comments and do appreciate that. And there will be discussion later on. But, you know, one of the best things about this is the bipartisan approach on this conformity bill. And that's why we wanted to avoid any revenue raisers, as you said, because I know it caused some angst for members. And so open for certainly discussion, but appreciate your comments. But the fact that I think this is really a good signal for the session, when one of the first things we're doing right here is bringing everyone together in a good bipartisan fashion to bring some tax relief immediately to folks. So thank you for those comments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion of the bill? Senator Dietzick, do you have a motion?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Rest. I move that Senate File 25 be passed and sent to the floor. Is that correct?
You have to recognize the amendment you put
okay.
on.
Oh, that's right. I move that Senate File 25 as amended be passed and moved to the floor.
Any discussion at this point? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails, and the bill will be sent to the Senate floor, awaiting action by the House so that we can get this bill to the governor's desk in a timely fashion. So thank you very much, Ms. Bears, and Commissioner Mark Ward for being with us this morning, and we're looking forward to seeing you again.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
So we're going to, I'm going to make some announcements now, and you may be excused. So I would just like to officially welcome all of you to the Senate Tax Committee. I hope that you will find our discussions lively and vigorous, and that we can work together. Certainly, I've worked with a number of you already, and respect the work that has been done in previous sessions. Did we introduce the staff? So let's just say who we are and what our district is, and then we'll call on the staff to introduce themselves. Senator Dibble, would you like to begin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very pleased to be back on the Tax Committee after a long hiatus. And my name is Scott Dibble. I'm a state senator in Senate District 61, which is most of Southwest Minneapolis and about half of downtown.
Thank you, Senator Dibbles. Senator
Excuse
Nelson.
Me, and a little bit of North Minneapolis. New in my district.
Hello. I'm State Senator Carla Nelson, my fifth term in the Senate, my third term on the tax team. Glad to remain here. I represent parts of Olmsted County, including Rochester, which I have represented for about 12 years now. But the new Senate district also includes all of Dodge County. So a little bit of a new district, and it's a joy to be on here again.
Senator Dietzick.
Good morning. Thank you, Senator Rust. My name is Carrie Dietzick, and I have the honor and privilege to represent Senate District 60, which includes most of southeast and northeast Minneapolis, Cedar Riverside. I lost Seward. I lost Nickel Island, so I lost big chunks of my district, but still pleased to be here and happy to have the district that I represent.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bill Weber from Laverne. I represent Senate District 21. My district includes all our parts of nine counties, and last year after the redistricting came out, I was visiting with Senator Dietzick. My new district goes about 123 miles from the South Dakota border to the east edge of St. James. And by the time I get to the east edge of my district, I'm halfway to St. Paul when I leave after I've left Laverne. And she was telling me, I think her district was 6 miles wide at that point. So we do have some differences of geography in our districts. But this is my beginning of my fourth term. I was the chair of the property tax subcommittee last year and member of the full tax committee. And I'd like at this point, Madam Chair, to publicly thank you for your efforts to make sure that we approach the tax policy in a bipartisan manner, and I appreciate the efforts you have made in that regard, and hopefully they will be they're symbols of what will continue throughout all of our committee structure and on the floor in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Klein.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Senator Matt Klein from District 53, which is parts of Mendota Heights and parts of West St. Paul, all of Inver Grove Heights, all of South St. Paul, and then across the river, Newport, St. Paul Park, and a bit of Cottage Grove. Pleasure to be on the committee, Chair.
Thank you. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everyone. Jeremy Miller, represent Senate District 26, which is all or parts of Fillmore, Houston, Winona, and now Maurer counties in southeastern Minnesota. It's great to be here.
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Eric Putnam. I represent Senate District 14, which is the sort of greater St. Cloud area, which includes St. Cloud proper, Waite Park, St. Augusta, big chunk of St. Joe. I'm new to taxes, not new to paying them, but new to having responsibility for other people's taxes, and I take that responsibility very seriously, and I'm eager to learn, especially from Senator Rest, given her tremendous wisdom in this area, and from the rest of you as well.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. Senator Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve Druskowski, House District or Senate District 20. They've said I'm in the process to being House trained, yeah. Madam Chair. So I was a member of the House for 15 years, and the bulk of that I've been on the tax committee. I was the chair of the property tax committee for two biennia, and my district includes all of Wabasha County, the majority of Goodhue County, the eastern half of Olmsted County, not including the metro area that Senator Nelson has, and the district butts up with Senator Miller's district in Winona County with a portion of that.
Thank you. Senator Hausschild.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, I'm Senator Grant Hausschild. I am a freshman senator and thrilled to be on the Tax Committee. I represent District 3. Which is both the most beautiful district in Minnesota, but also the largest geographical district. It's the size of Massachusetts. I get to represent the North Shore and beautiful Big Lake Superior, the Iron Range, mines and timber and mills across my district, two tribal nations in Boys Fort and Grand Portage, and the state of hockey community of Hermantown and state champions there. So I am thrilled to be here and couldn't be more humbled to be on the tax committee. Thank you to Chair Rest and Senator Dietzick for this opportunity.
Thank you. And now we'll ask the committee staff to identify themselves, starting with the committee administrator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mitch Bergren, and I'm happy to be back after a little while out in the lobbying world.
And the committee legislative assistant?
Apologies there, I'm short. My name is Christy Blood. I'm Senator Rest's committee legislative assistant. This is my first session, and I'm very excited, and I'm very honored to be learning about taxes from Senator Rest. I have a lot to learn, and I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Caucus research, I'm going down the our committee letterhead here. Caucus Research, Krista Broughton. DFL Research, and Dan Mickelberg, who is Republican Research, Senate Counsel.
Madam Chair, members, good morning. Nora Pollack, Senate Counsel, nonpartisan Senate Counsel for Sales and Income Taxes. I'm very, very much looking forward to working with all of you this session. It'll be my 13th with the Senate and with the committee.
Mr. Sylvia.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. My name is Eric Sylvia. I serve as Senate Counsel alongside Nora. I'm primarily responsible for the property tax area, mining, minerals, tax income, and financing.
And the legislative analyst, Mr. Arneson.
Madam Chair and members, good morning. My name is Bjorn Arneson. I'm a nonpartisan analyst with the taxes team. My primary responsibilities are municipal aids, county aids, other aid programs, property tax modeling simulations, and some income tax simulations as well. Glad to be here.
And our fiscal analyst, Mr. Mum.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Casey Mum. I'm the fiscal analyst for the committee. This is my ninth session with the Senate, but my first staffing the taxes committee. I previously covered the capital investment and jobs, energy, and commerce committees. So I'm excited to be here.
Thank you very much. We have excellent staff, partisan and nonpartisan, Republican and DFL, and I think we're going to be able to put together a really responsible omnibus bill that benefits the taxpayers of Minnesota and also their families and the business community in Minnesota as well. I want you to know that I am familiar with Rule 12, as is Mr. Berggren, which is the operative document in Senate rules, section of Senate rules that governs committees. There is also a document from the Senate handbook that talks about decorum in committees, which we will be following, and it includes things like addressing and referring people by their titles, whatever they may be, and whatever they choose to have us refer to them. We will be hearing both DFL and Republican bills, and I invite you to talk with me about those bills and your colleagues so that we can have, again, a vigorous discussion about any number of things. I do have one rule in terms of bills that will be heard, and that is I won't be hearing any bill that has five authors of the same party. You either have if you're a Democrat, you have at least one Republican on your bill, or you can leave it blank and hold out hope that someone will think your bill is a good idea. So it can be four Democrats, and the same thing for the Republicans. It can be four Republicans, but it can't be five. I consider those bills statement bills. It's like what you really want to do is go out in the hall and have a press conference on your idea. So if you are amenable to that, if you want to have five people on your bill, that's fine. What you're doing is telling me you don't want it to be heard. one other thing, as of Tuesday, none of the containers that are on this table will be allowed. Last night, we adopted a rule regarding beverages for the Senate floor. Seems to me we will, it's appropriate. We have the same rule for committees, and that includes, I think the phrase now is unadorned, clear bottle of water. You won't be able to hide it under, or that would be ridiculous in my mind, to hide it underneath, but everybody will have the same bottle of water. There'll be a bunch of them on the table behind us. That's what you may bring to the table. We are assuming that unlike the Rule 12 with regard to committees is silent on food and beverages in a committee room. There will be absolutely no food, including behind me, but there the water will be in bottles that will be provided if you have a need. And the rule says that in expectation of a session, in this case a hearing, lasting for an hour, more than an hour, that water is allowed, and you can be assured that our committees will last longer than an hour, and so you may bring your bottle of water, pick up your bottle of water, and please take it with you if you don't consume the whole bottle. So any questions about the policies that are going to direct this committee under the leadership of Senator Klein and myself? Well, then, there being no further business before the Tax Committee, we stand adjourned.